Welcome to the Hollywood Outsider, an award-winning weekly entertainment podcast. In this episode, we're talking solely about Stranger Things, Season 4, Volume 1 and 2. Let's get on with the show. My name is Aaron Peterson. Joining me today for just this Stranger Things discussion is Troy Heinrichs.
Mostly just Volume 2. I don't remember what happened in Volume 1 because it was a whole, 3 weeks ago.
That's so long ago. Thankfully, we recorded that separate, so we already have that ready to go. That's plug and play.
Exactly.
You might have already heard that conversation. That's on you, but we're going to go through that again because we're going to take it Volumes 1 and Volumes 2, which Volume 1 was Episodes 1 through 7, and then Volume 2 was 8 and 9, which is the real, that's where all the stuff culminated, all the action happened.
Or we could just call it Stranger Things Season 4, and then Stranger Things the Movie Part 1, and Stranger Things the Movie Part 2.
It's pretty much all it was, wasn't it? I mean, my God. Apparently Netflix is just like, whatever you need to do, take our money. Just take it.
Yeah.
Do you feel like, unlike other TV shows, do you feel like you saw the $30 million an episode that they ended up spending here?
In this season? Yeah, I definitely think I did.
Yeah.
Yeah, the VFX department for sure. With the bats, the upside down, the transition between the upside down and the right side up through the camper ceiling. I thought that was pretty cool and well done.
The royalties for Masters of Puppets, Journey.
The royalties for Kate Bush, who's making bazillions of dollars now on streaming records.
Can you imagine that? I had never even heard that song before. I'm not knocking Kate Bush, but I had never, ever heard Running Up That Hill. I have never heard that, and I love 80s music. And now she's made, I think, a bazillion dollars. That's the actual total. That's the accounting.
I mean, I remembered when I was 10, I made this really cool thing that resembled Gumby. I still haven't seen any of the royalties from that.
I don't even know what the hell you're talking about. All right, well, we're going to start with Stranger Things Volume 1 and our thoughts on that. So you might have already heard this part, because we did already kind of allude to this portion of it. It was on part of our podcast a few weeks ago. We figured we'll put it all together for people that are Stranger Things fans. So here's our discussion on Volume 1, and we're going to come back after that, and we're going to talk about Volume 2. We have L off with Dr. Martin Brenner, who is definitely not dead. Are you surprised by this, Troy?
No.
Okay, she almost...
Seven episodes, just so everybody's aware.
Yeah, there's seven. It was weird. It was originally supposed to be five and then four in the volume two, and then they changed it to seven. That was a weird change, but whatever.
That's because there's four episodes in volume two. They just squished them into two episodes.
Right.
Runtimes. Oh my gosh, the runtimes in this season
are nuts. We'll talk about it. Hang on in a second. So after she split Angela's head open, that's when she leaves with Dr. Martin Brenner to kind of get her powers back. And I gotta say, like, are there no parents in the skating rink? I don't understand why nobody's coming to Elle's, benefit here.
There was no adults there. It was like all high school kids, maybe a few college kids, but there was like no parental adults.
But they had like the biggest bullying session since Carrie. And they can't even, nobody can step forward and be like, hey, it wasn't really her fault. Like, she split that girl's head because she was kind of a bitch, right?
It was awesome. That's what it was.
So the other characters, Mike and Will, are off searching their feelings as they're on the run with Jonathan and his buddy. Dustin and Steve are back together. Love those two together, as Steve is babysitting again while Lucas, Nancy, and Robin join in trying to save Max and others from the new demon, Vecna, who has framed new favorite character Eddie for the murder of several teens. And man, I mean, I don't know where to start, but what do you think of this new? Well, first let's talk about the runtime. So you don't like this new runtime thing for the season, right? Where they're basically almost movie length most of the time.
Yeah. I mean, when you think about sitting down and watching a TV show, you have this like, standard 44 minutes, possibly 55 minutes if you're watching HBO, but there's like a time frame you're expecting in these things, because maybe you want to get a workout in and you're going to watch it while you ride your bike or do some yoga or whatever it is that you're end up, or washing some dishes or what have you. Like, there's an expectation of like how long I have to watch this. And when it's like 123, 116, 108, it's like, just pick one time and stick with the consistency, I think would be helpful. At the same time, tell a good story and tell the story you want to tell, because I think that's also a very valid point. The thing with this is that it was just like, at some point it's like, I got to pee, especially if you're doing the binge. And it's just like the pee breaks are like built in to be like at like the 120 mark. And that's like in the middle of episode three. So it's like I got to go. I got to pause it. I don't want to pause it.
Okay. I will say I did feel like they were longer than they probably, I don't want to say needed to be, because I never felt bored, man. Like I was interested the whole time. So, I mean,
yeah,
more Stranger Things isn't a bad thing. To me, it's like, you obviously have more episodes here. So why not just call it more episodes? Why does it have to be the number 9? I guess, why not make it 11? There you go. There's a nice nod to your own show. You know?
It's a fair statement.
It's weird. It's weird how they're doing it. But as to the show itself, what do you think, first of all, of the new villain, Vecna? And especially that tie-in where was the kid's name Henry? Victor Creel's son? Was his name Henry, I think?
I don't remember Victor Creel's son's name off the top of my head. Because that's who
Vecna is.
What?
Because you and I both thought pretty early or maybe it was Henry was the orderly's name. Maybe that was the name, but
just the same person.
Yeah. Well, they're all the same. So somebody's a Henry, but the orderly that's talking to Eleven when she's trying to regain her powers or when she's reliving the past,
regaining her powers. Reliving. I think that's the thing that's most confusing about this season.
A little bit
is that a lot of what we see happen in the
pre-season one.
It's actually pre-season one stuff, even though you think you're experiencing it as modern day, because you have to remember she goes into the deprivation tank,
right?
So what you're seeing is actually a memory. You're not actually seeing current state. And so back in that pre-season one state, even though Eleven looks much older because she's obviously living it as her current self going through that memory recall, she runs into this orderly, and orderly is telling her of like there was a person that could do this trick, and it was number one. And the minute he said that, I was like, oh, that dude's number one.
Oh, yeah. Same here. I'm like, okay, so he's number one.
Yeah.
That's pretty good. But I did not see the connection to where he's Victor Creel's son, who actually murdered his whole family and tortured his own father. And then, you know, becomes Vecna. Like, he really, Eleven made him happen. So now we've got a full circle to connect all these dots. And I thought that was a great reveal. Do you agree with that? Or
100%. I think it's what saves the season, actually, because for a lot of the season,
what?
For a lot of the season, you're kind of like thrown around a lot, I think, is one of the things that's kind of jarring this time around. You have the group of people that moved on with the buyers, right? They went out to California at the end of last season. And so you got, you know, Eleven, you got Jonathan, you got Will, and their mom, and then Joyce, and it's just, they're all out in California. So you have like that group of people that are doing stuff. And then you have the kids that are now in high school. And so there's a jarring move there of like new high school people you're trying to get, where are they? Like trying to figure that part out. And it's like, oh, okay, they're in high school, they're in Hawkins, you know, the gates have been closed. It's maybe a couple of years later. So they can get that, you know, the kids look older because they all, you know, are 45 now by the time they're filming this.
They are.
And then buying beer. You have the whole Hopper sequence in Russia where that's all going down. So it jumps around between these three different parts. So it's not just solely focused on Hawkins and the Upside Down and the things that are happening. So you have to kind of like play with those three things for 4 to 5 episodes before that really starts to get going. It's really episode 4 that really goes, oh, okay, this is what the season is about. And really ropes you into the stakes that are at play. And then like 4, 5, 6, 7, it's like watching a feature length movie, all 4 of those episodes. Those first 3 are a little bit slow, in my opinion, until you get to episode 4.
Man, I don't agree at all. I loved, minus the Russian subplot. The Russian stuff isn't working for me at all. I feel like that should have been half of an episode, getting him back. Like, I just don't care. It's ridiculous how he survived.
Because it wasn't as cool of a reveal. I think that's what it was. Because like, at the end of last season, you're like, oh, well, this just makes so much more sense. He like jumped into the Upside Down, right, into the gate, came out on the other side. And then when it's revealed that all he did was get blown down to a floor below.
Stupid. That's stupid.
Like, just dumb.
Wait, so she didn't think to just check real quick. Maybe he's on the ground. maybe he hit the turf. And I'm trying to figure out, like, how do you survive an explosion that just wiped out all those people that were there? But he survived. That's a dumb explanation. You're right. The Upside Down and coming out in Russia is what I think everybody kind of thought. And then you get the actual reveal and you're like, that's absolutely ignorant. That's an ignorant,
especially
answer.
Because you see the Demogorgon at the end of the season.
Right.
So you're like, well, clearly they had a gate in Russia or wherever the prison is, yep. Alaska or whatever it ends up being. you know, trying to pull that Demogorgon through. Like, it would make more sense if the gate was in Russia versus capturing a Demogorgon in Indiana and then flying it back home. I mean, come on.
I mean, Alaska, you can see Russia from their house. They're in Russia. It's just, you know, Alaska's really close. It's weird, man. That's a weird solution. I don't like that subplot at all. I still love the characters. You know, I think Hop is always a fun character to watch, and it's cool to see him kick some ass, and it's nice to see a couple Game of Thrones nods in there. But on the same token, none of that is really doing much for me. None of that. The kids are where it's at. But all of the kids stuff, I'm enthralled by, especially Steve and Dustin. I want Steve to be the character that outlives many of the kids, honestly. I just find Steve to be the most riveting character and a goddamn hero. Outlive
him because he's the babysitter.
He's a goddamn hero is what he is, man.
And he's going to get Nancy back.
I've been rewatching a bunch of Stranger Things, kind of like I was getting ready for this season. And I like this season more than 3, by the way. But it's amazing to me, like, how far that character has come, how far he's developed. And he's always the character, do you ever notice this, that he's always bitching about being the babysitter and stuff, but he's the first one to do the hero move.
Yeah.
Like, he doesn't blink. He just does it.
And yeah, he's the first one to go through Watergate down at the bottom of the lake.
He's the one that saves Max. Really, the other kids were like, no, wait. And he's like, no, I'm calling it. She can sue me. And that's what gets him going on trying to figure out how to save Max, which I will agree with you. That is probably one of, if not my favorite Stranger Things scene. Is where they save Max from.
Yeah, Vecna. The cinematography, the color schemes, the music playing. The
Kate Bush song.
Oh, yeah. I mean, now here, not to poo-poo it by any stretch of the imagination, but given Max's upbringing, you know, her dad, you know, leaving and then living in the trailer park, like, I feel like she's not really a Kate Bush type person for that to be like her favorite song.
I disagree. If you really listen to the song, I mean, she's going through a lot of emotional turmoil, and that's a really kind of almost emo song. So I feel like it fit what she was going through because she really kind of blames herself and she's really regretting. You can tell by the letter she's reading to Billy that it's a much more impactful moment. And that's why that song keeps speaking to her. And I think we all had that when we were kids, right? We had something that we were going through something. And a song, you know, we were just talking about soundtracks. I had it happen so often where the song would be speaking to me in a moment of struggle. That's what I think I think they really, really illustrated that moment well. And I also think what I see so many people talking about, it's just great to show friendship and all that, which is great. But I also, it was a great mental health moment, I thought, how they showed someone that was really just really stopped caring about life and was forgetting that there's a lot of people that love her in her life. And she was forgetting that. She wasn't seeing that. She was so depressed. She wasn't seeing it anymore. And even though they were still right there trying to do it. And it took her almost losing her life to really see that. I thought that was actually a beautiful moment. And Sadie Sink, I think, is the most talented of the young actors on the show.
For sure. For sure.
So I love the direction it's going. I've been enthralled with it, except for Russia. Every time Russia happens, I'm like, that's a good... There's your pee break, Troy.
Yeah. And I feel like it's also not as 80s on the nose as like the last seasons have been. I feel like it's kind of like left the 80s factor to it and just focused more on the story.
Except for Mike's outfit.
Yeah. Yeah. His outfit's pretty dated. Not going to lie. The other things that I think that are really good inside of this season, you get to see the town itself is kind of like, yeah, what's going on in our town? I'm kind of done with this. Like the town is finally starting to fight back against the upside down and the things that are happening. So it's great to see the town get involved.
And the parents are involved.
Locations within the town.
And the parents are getting involved.
I think it's good too. Yeah.
How do you feel about, I mean, so poor Eddie. They're jumping, yeah. Just jumping to poor Eddie. I mean, I love that character. I don't know about you, but I'm really starting to take a liking to him.
And I like the writing around the whole, well, you know, Eddie might not be the one doing the killing, but he's like the possessed channel for the devil's cult or whatever. Oh. They call it the Hellfire Club.
That's a total 80s, tied in. Total 80s thing, too. That was big in the 80s.
So, like, that part was really good. I'm really more enthralled with the 11 storyline as that was progressing and how she's, like, dealing with the stuff and reliving the memories. And, because when you come into the season, you're just like, well, what are they going to do, right? The Mind Flayer or one of his... if it was not the Mind Flayer, it was at least one of his like really, really, really high up henchmen.
Sure.
And, you know, he's dead now at the end of the third season. The gates are sealed. It's like, how do you get back to the Upside Down? So trying to figure out like how the Upside Down would crack open again, I think is a really great thing. And then tying it into this explanation of how the Big Bad was created in the first place, because they assumed that this person was like a lieutenant or a general for the Mind Flayer. And that probably wasn't that at all. He's just possessed by the darkness as he gets sucked into the first gate that Eleven opens, you know, before this show even starts. It's that original gate opening where Vecna actually gets created as he's getting sucked in.
So is there anything you don't like about the season so far?
Just how long the Russia thing's been taking.
Because he should have been out by now, right? I mean, it's seven freaking episodes, man.
It makes sense. You're trying to build it up for the climax of the seventh episode.
Right, and get them all together.
This is where, you know, we're going to like have the whole, like, he's going to see Joyce and they're going to embrace. And it's like all the emotionalness is all saved up for the seventh episode. So you get it. So you got to kind of drag it on. And then you got to manufacture enough stuff for Joyce to have to do something. So the whole Yuri, the peanut butter smuggler storyline comes into play. You know, all of that stuff is just filler to make the emotional parts hit in episode 7 versus episode 3.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of that. And I feel like there's maybe like one too many characters at this point. I can't put a finger on which character there's too many of, but I just feel like they've got too much going on. It's too busy to a degree.
Well, because you have like the original crew plus Max plus Robin plus Eddie plus they go find Susie. And it's just like, okay, like how many more like people do we need to add to the ensemble? Can we get back to the original four at some point?
Yeah, and it was weird how Susie keeps saving the world. Like, it just feels like that's a very convenient plot device at this point, like two seasons in a row.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just feel like there's one character too many, and I love all of them. I feel like Robin's a little shortchanged in this season, where she was just adorable and riveting in every episode that she was in last year. And this year, I feel like they're just trying to make her fit.
Well, because she's not a, you know, love interest for Steve. She's trying to be best friends with Nancy. Well, Nancy's trying to figure out her crap with Steve.
And Jonathan.
And Jonathan. And it's just like, yeah, Robin's is kind of left as like the, you know, hey, guys, include me.
Yeah, and Will is just over there kind of being... there's a lot of people talking about his sexuality these days. Like, is he gay or is he not? I mean, his mom alluded to him being gay in the first episode, so I just assumed he is.
And why is that even a story point or a factor?
I don't know. I feel like maybe he has a thing with Mike, or he cares about Mike, and there's relationship there, and that there's probably some understanding that needs to happen before the end of the season or whatever. But maybe. I also think, you know, if he is, he's great. If he's not, great. Just tell me the Stranger Things story.
Will's also the character that is the most, what do you want to call it, hampered, because he was the boy that was missing for the entire first season.
Sure.
So you like don't like get to know Will until the end of the whole thing is done. And so really the whole team became a team without Will. So now that Will's in the picture in the second and third seasons, it's kind of like,
it's awkward.
I don't care about Will.
Yeah, it's kind of awkward. It's ill-fitting.
Can you just kidnap him again and just make him disappear?
But I did like the friend dynamic, because that was really important. Like, as kids get older, even if they were close-knit friends, you do find wanting to be popular. So you kind of like Lucas, you know, he joins the basketball team and you want to go there. And they were also kind of jerks by not going to his game. It was like the one game that was really important to him that they show up and they didn't do it. They went and played D&D together. You know, I mean, those kinds of things, those fractions happen in close friendships, and I'm glad that they're kind of addressing them, and it feels real, feels genuine. And the times when I thought Lucas might be doing the wrong thing for popularity's sake, he did the right thing, like leading them to Hop's cabin as opposed to where Eddie actually was and actually trying to warn them. I mean, he didn't change who he was, which is what I hate in shows when they do that, where now I'm with the popular crowd, so now I'm doing the mean things, you know what I mean? Because that's not how real friends typically would do it. They'd still be real friends. They might just not be as open publicly as they used to be.
Even though he looks the most different of the entire cast.
You think so?
Oh, yeah. Like, at first I was like, who's this guy?
Him and Mike. Like, Mike looks like he's Lucas? 37 years old, and Lucas looks like
he's 38. But it still looks like Mike.
Lucas looks like Lucas, I think, except he's got muscles. No.
Lucas does not look like Lucas. Lucas looks like he, like, aged up a lot compared to everybody else.
He definitely worked out a lot. Everybody else is still eating Cheez-Its and freaking SpaghettiOs. And he's over there. He's like, protein shakes, baby. I'm an athlete. Great basketball win, too. And I do. What do you think about this, the satanic section of the town? Because D&D was seen as kind of like the devil's game back in the 80s. There's a long period where that was the case. And I know you kind of talked about it before, but how do you like, because I can see this really turning the town against the kids.
Yeah, it'll be an interesting thing that they can play off of for the final two of the season, right, when it comes back in July. Because I think there's a movement there that the town being all riled up and going after everybody, you don't see it a lot of it because you end up seeing the cops come to the lake, not the townspeople come to the lake to find the kids. So I think that's going to be something that's going to be really interesting as the rest of this plays out, as they figure it out, okay, once Eleven comes back into the picture, once they have to actually go kill Vecna once and for all, you know, how the townspeople are going to mess that up, I think is going to be an interesting thing to play with.
Okay. Anything you want to say more on Stranger Things before we call it?
No, and actually I felt like, I don't know if it was just because it was seven episodes, even though all the episodes were longer, I felt like the binge this time around was easier than, say, season two or season three. Like season two, it just seemed like it was an all day affair. Like this didn't seem like an all day affair. Maybe because I broke it up over 2 days, but.
Well, I think for me, I mean, you know, I'm such an 80s horror kid. So a lot of these really speak to me, but this is such a Nightmare on Elm Street vibe all the way through,
sure.
Even with the Robert 100%. Englund popping up as Victor Creel, which is a nice nod. There's a lot of nods, obviously, to all kinds of 80s films, but to Nightmare on Elm Street in particular, because in the first episode, I'm like, oh, so the villain is basically Freddy Krueger. That's what I'm getting. And yeah, and except in this one, he can attack you when you're awake, which I really love. And you and I were talking about, like, one of my favorite moments, I think, in this first batch is in episode 7, where he gets Nancy, because it was a real play on audience expectations, really. And actually, episode 4 was too, because so many people were talking about how emotional they got. I just assumed that Max was going to die in that episode, and she didn't, thank God. And I love that, how she came out. Made me cry. But the Nancy episode. So, you know, they're leaving the upside down. They're pulling out, which is very clever, by the way. Dustin.
Yeah, the physics on it was awesome.
Dustin is a genius. I think he should just be running the show at this point. I love how he's like, yeah, when are you guys going to believe me? I'm like, always right. That's like a little huge, right? So they're coming out, and you just know it's going to be Steve, right? You just know, because he's the guy that's going to go last. So there's no way he gets out of the upside down. He's going to be trapped there or get killed or something. And it's Nancy, and it's a real clever play. Even though it feels like we should have expected it, it's a very clever play. And that's the one that got me. That one really got me.
Yeah, and the fact that it's preying off of your fears.
Yeah.
It's very much like not only the Nightmare on Elm Street, but it's also an it factor as well.
Yes, very much so. Yeah. Good call. It's like a good combo between it and, which is still that Stephen King vibe that the show is always going for, and also one of the best horror movies of all time.
Yeah.
Okay, now it's time for Stranger Things Volume 2. That's where all the magic happened. I mean, I think it's crazy that I feel like so much more happened in these two episodes, which again, like you said, are 4 hours. So it's a lot.
Yeah. I mean, 4 hours, if you did like 40 minute episodes, this would have been a whole season in itself.
It's concluded now. You've got the answers you were looking for. You're wondering where things were going to go, where they were going to lead, what was going to happen with Vecna. Where do you sit with this?
I mean, I had the answers I needed at the end of volume 1. Volume 2 was just, let's go kill the guy.
It's a long time to kill that guy.
It was a very elaborate plan. I mean, there was like the people on the front lines, and then there was, you got to weaken it in Russia. And then there was the whole, we can just, you know, distract them by like doing voodoo magic in a salt dough ice tub in a pizza joint.
It was Mousetrap. That's what it was. Think about it.
It was something.
It was everybody playing Mousetrap in different parts of the country.
Different parts of the world. The world.
We're going to talk about the whole plan as a whole, because I'm not convinced this was the smartest plan ever. I'm not convinced this was the way that they should have went, but I want to talk about that in a minute. First, just your overall thoughts. Season as a whole, now that you've concluded it.
Fabulous. Fabulous. It was so good.
Okay.
It makes season two look like dog do. Season two was just so not fun compared to this season.
Is this your favorite? Well, season two had that crappy episode where they
Yeah, when they introduce you to eight.
Yeah, nobody needs that. We just revisited season two, and I didn't even watch that episode. My wife said, didn't we skip an episode? I'm like, we sure did, but I'm not watching that again.
I'm just sitting there going like, man, couldn't have one just killed eight? I'm looking for the continuity area. Where's the retcon to get rid of eight altogether?
Whatever it takes. So where does it land for you in terms of the other season? Do you think it's better?
No, it's good. It was really, really good. I like the emotional impact of the season. I like the transitioning of the kids kind of growing into their own as they come into high school, even though they're like graduated from college in real life at this point.
They are 45 years old.
Yeah. All in all, I would say that this was thoroughly entertaining. I always feel like panicked or rushed to like binge it all those first couple years. Mm-hmm. And like, I didn't feel super rushed to watch it, but it also just kind of like flowed naturally that even the first volume, I felt like I was watching like a long form movie and wasn't even concerned about runtime. Wasn't concerned about what was happening or how long I'd been sitting on my ass for an entire day. I was just enjoying what I was watching as it was unfolding. I mean, especially episode four with the running up the hill with Max. I mean, just visually cinematically, all of that was just fantastic. And then the whole, in this case, for this volume with the metal song and just everything that was happening there, and so good. Just really, really good TV.
What amazed me is I don't think I've been as enthralled with Stranger Things since season one. I've liked all of them, but season one is the last time I was just enthralled. In the zone, in the mood. I felt like it was very compelling storytelling. I felt like the visuals were just intriguing. I felt like all characters mattered. There was a path and an arc for everyone, which is really hard to do when you have, I think, what, 36 characters currently? And they still pull it off.
Quite a few. I mean, yeah, and even though a lot of it is like blatantly ripped off, right? I mean, this was the whole plan screams Dream Warriors. You know, Nightmare on Elm Street Part 3.
Pretty much so,
trying to suck Freddy out into the real in order to, like, actually kill Freddy for real. You had the, you know, with number one's big reveal felt very much like Dollhouse in the fact that they had Alpha before they had Echo and how Alpha just kind of went nuts and schizo. So a lot of this is like a retread of past concepts, but the way they interwove it and made it work, I thought was really fantastic.
And I thought they really... They culminated in terms of they've peaked. Usually you get to a show and season four of any series is not the best one, or it's not even in talks for the best one.
Yeah, three is usually where they peak, and then it's like, we just have to do four to get to five to finish it.
Yeah, and then we slowly but surely end on a really down note. But here I really feel like they have seen what works, what doesn't work, and they've done a very, very good job of bringing those things together. With the exception of, I do think the Russia storyline should have been solved. I think we talked about this in our volume one.
Two discussion. Episodes.
Yeah, two episodes max. Max.
We broke out of the prison. Now we're breaking back into the prison because we don't have a way to actually fly to the States. And it's like, even the military stuff was kind of weak as well. You know, with the one dude who was trying to track down Eleven to kill her. I mean, super great visuals in the desert. When that all went down with the long shot that they had from mm-hmm. behind her as the helicopter crashes, like that's just spectacular. But the whole military concept from a story perspective was a little weak.
Yeah, I didn't need Papa back, but I'm glad he's dead finally. And the Duffer brothers who were behind the show, they cemented, yes, he is dead, dead. Thank God.
Well, and the fact that he had kind of had a redemption story too, when he actually...
Did he though? I mean, would you call that a redemption story? He's still a dick.
Yeah, but he did undo the neck, the compression necklace that was around her, the shock collar.
Only because he knew he was dead.
Yeah, but
it's like he trapped a dog and trained it to be a lethal killer, and then he kept the freaking invisible fence around their neck, and then I guess I'm gonna die here in a second. I guess now I'll let you go so you can fend for yourself. He didn't really let her go. He just didn't. He saw that he had no other option at that point. Just saying. I'm not giving him the pass that you're giving him. You're like, he learned a lesson. I'm like, nah, he didn't.
I mean, he didn't have to undo it. Just saying. He could have just left it on and then made the kids try to figure out how to get it off.
He's totally a Scooby-Doo villain. I would have gotten away with it if it wasn't for you meddling military. That's what I'm saying. Well, let's talk about some of the major arcs. We're not going to go and recap all of it because there's way too much going on. But, and there's 1,000 podcasts that are devoted to Stranger Things that you can actually just, they can go through piece by piece. But a lot of the major story elements that happen, like Hopper and Joyce, they finally had their kiss, almost got it on too. And Russia was finally resolved. I do want to point out Hopper is kind of buff in these final two episodes. Like, he's looking good.
Except for that, you know, leathery bacon back that he's got from all the slashing.
Aside from that, but I mean, he takes his shirt off and I'm like, all right, not bad. He's been prepping for Joyce and the hopes that she returned. He wanted to make sure, you know, A, I'm hungry for some breadsticks, but B, when you see this,
I'll still be hungry for breadsticks because I lost a lot of weight.
Yeah, true. And you're not thinking about Bob entirely.
Right. Although she did think about Bob once.
Well, I like that because I felt like that was her thinking, I'm not going to not do anything this time. Because remember when Bob died, she just stood there looking at him. And
That's what I would have done. I would have been like, dude, that's a freaking like Ghostbusters dog eating you there. I'm not getting involved in that shit.
I agree with that. To be fair, that really it's Bob's fault. I just rewatched that. And it's a sad scene. It's
totally Bob's fault.
Bob hesitated. You just don't hesitate in that moment. He stood there. He's looking at her longingly. And he pauses. And he's just like, Winona Ryder. I mean, Joyce, you're so attractive. And then he gets killed. And it's on him. Stupid. Yeah. Stupid Bob. But he does get to use the real Conan sword. I checked on this and David Harbour confirmed that is the real sword from Conan the Barbarian movies.
That's cool.
Isn't that cool? And there I saw some people were like, where did that sword come from? Earlier in the season when the other prisoners were given weapons to fight the monsters off, they died. There's a sword.
It was left behind on the ground. It was just there.
And that was a fantastic moment.
Oh yeah. Fantastic. The head lopped off. I was yes.
Now,
it was a stand up and cheer moment.
Everything else with Yuri and all that, didn't care at all about it.
Yeah, I am not a fan of peanut butter before. I'm still not a fan of peanut butter later.
But I'm glad Joyce and Hopper got together and they had their kiss and she saves him. And even though he told her it was going to be different, he was totally going to be Bob there for a second. And she came and tasered that.
Can we just talk about how the entire country is looking for them and they go back to Yuri's stronghold? Like,
and nobody checked it?
And nobody went there? Like,
they were busy. They were being, you know, there's an onslaught of monsters coming after them, right?
I suppose, but still, it's a big, Russia's a big country.
You'd think they could call somebody.
Right.
Guys, can you check Yuri's compound?
Send some peanut butter our way so we can have these attack dogs that are coming from another dimension, like, lick that for a while instead of us.
Something. All right. I want to talk about the kids' plan because there's parts of me where I love the execution because it made for some great cinematic material, right? But the actual plan, one, I guess they couldn't get a hold of 11, but me, I'm like, why did they have to do it right then? Because it just felt like such a risk for so many of them when they don't have 11, who has always been their backup, their major key component. It's like none of them put together, you know, yeah, we've won a bunch of times, but we only won because the one with the superpowers was handy. You know what I mean? Like, they just totally forgot that and put together this master plan that I liked in its intricacy, but I also thought, how did you ever think this was going to work?
I mean, I bought the plan. I thought the plan was actually a solid plan. You know, you get up there, he's worried about Max, so he's not actually physically present when he's, you know, there. The whole, like, trapping him and moving him and that whole, I loved all of that. They forgot about the vines. Like, you gotta be thinking about the vines.
But we will agree that, once again, were it not for 11, they would have all died.
I don't know on this one.
I just think they had Steve and everyone trapped in the vines. Max was trapped at the snowball. The only reason that Max even got any kind of break or a reprieve and everybody else got a chance to do anything was because 11 showed up. And then I guess you got Joyce and Hopper that are distracting on another front. So
that's my question. Like, if Joyce and Hopper would have killed the Demogorgon and did the weakening thing, then all the dust or whatever was inside the one, would that have weakened him enough that 11 wouldn't have necessarily have been needed? We never got to see that, actually. Like, could they have done it on their own without 11?
Possible, right?
I think so.
It's possible. But still, they only had, and they didn't, they only had a measure of success because they still kind of lost, really. But they only survived because 11 showed up via pizza ice bucket.
So weird.
Ice bucket challenge. That's the only reason that they technically survived once again. And I was kind of hoping that, honestly, they wouldn't need 11 for this. I was really kind of hoping for that. I thought the kids could pull it off on their own. And obviously they could not. They got closer, but they could not. If you think about it, because 11's the one that jumps in the mind and has the fight in the mind layer.
The piggyback.
The piggyback, exactly. So do you thought it was a smart plan, though, outside of that? You thought at least, hey, they're giving it a shot. But why did it have to be right then? Why couldn't it have been the next day? Maybe give it more time. Maybe see if 11 will answer the phone.
Because they've been calling for days as it is already. Like, Max is just like, I got to get this done with.
I'm sick of this song.
This song. Every time I play it, another 20 cents goes to Kate Bush and not me.
All right. Well, you know, it's still made for a really thrilling movie. I don't even want to call it an episode.
Yeah, it was a movie. It was a full-on event.
Okay, so we're going to take some of the big moments here. Master of Puppets, Eddie's death. Did he actually buy time in your mind? Like some people are saying that his death wasn't necessary. I guess, you know, he basically left. He escaped. He was clean. And then he went back to buy them more time. Do you feel like he bought more time?
I would say no, because at that point they'd already been taken by the vines. So really, you know, it didn't buy any more time. However, he doesn't know that. So in his mind, he's thinking, oh man, I run away all the time. This is my chance to be a hero and take a stand. So I love the character move on it. And yeah, when that happens, unfortunately, death is inevitable when you're fighting an entire horde of bats.
See, I think he did buy more time.
Demigorgon bats.
I think he did buy more time.
Well, I mean, he gave him more time in the sense that he gave Max more time so that way 11 could do the piggyback and get in, but they had no idea 11 was coming.
They didn't, but keep in mind.
Did he give him more time? Sure, but.
But you've got Steve, Nancy, and Robin are all strung up on the vines. If he would have just left and escaped and the bats, their attention turned back to the house because by then they knew they were there. The bats could have devoured them before 11 made her move. You know what I mean? So I do think, in essence, he did buy more time.
Yeah, I could buy that.
What'd you think about that Master of Puppets? I was a huge Metallica fan back in the day, man. So as soon as that guitar riff starts, I'm like, yes! I knew exactly what it was. Oh, stoked.
Yeah, I mean, song sequence was great. The movement of the bats was great. The only thing was, like, when it's happening, I mean, you could tell it's very CGI'd in that sequence because of the compression in the stream from Netflix. So that was kind of the only bummer part. It didn't look very fluid.
I would love to see that in a movie theater.
Yeah, I think in the movie theater it would have played much better.
Oh, that I just love that scene, though, man, because it's just, well, I love the song. So as soon as Master Puppets kicks in, finally, like, Kate Bush took me a while to get into because I've never heard this song. Master Puppets, I had that cassette. People, that's how long ago it was.
I mean, Dustin looked a little dorky with his little head banging. I mean,
no, he Dustin looked like all of us at that age that heard that song for the first time. He looked exactly like we did.
26. What? How old is he now?
Oh my god, I don't know. But and the real song, if you didn't know, is like 8 minutes and 35 seconds or something. Like, I mean, it's a long song.
Glorious, all of it.
Yeah, it is. Oh, just a master of metal is what that song is. So that was a great scene. And Joseph Quinn, the actor who played Eddie, I give him a lot of credit because one episode I was all in on Eddie. And I think that's hard to do with this many characters that you're already rooting for.
Yeah. From the jump when he was like, welcome to Hellfire. Yep. I was like, that's a cool character. I like that character much better than Barb ever was.
Right. Everybody was poor Barb. I'm like, I really didn't. Yeah. Sorry, Barb. Didn't think much of you. Eddie, he had that beautiful scene with Chrissy, and he starts this scene and he says, I didn't even catch it the first time, man. Didn't catch it the first time. I don't know if you did, but when he says, Chrissy, this is for you, I'm like,
yep.
I have one.
That was good.
And that tie-in, I should say, I loved how it tied into Dustin talking to his uncle at the end. That was a pretty beautiful moment.
Yeah, because the 2 weeks later or whatever it was,
two days later.
It wasn't necessary at all, except to like, oh, here's some loose ends that we totally forgot to do. But that sequence, the conversation with his uncle, I thought that was class. That was really, really good.
I respect that he had the conversation. I'm still, part of me is, if I'm the uncle, like, so wait, what do you mean he was trying to save the town? From what? Was he holding the the split together? I don't understand. I would want a little bit more clarification. But I
Were the ground open up? Was he like holding two vines and trying to pull it back together like the Incredible Hulk? Like what's going on?
What exactly was he doing? But I respect it because otherwise his poor uncle would be traumatized, like Barb's parents were
right
a couple of seasons back. I respect that he grew from what happened with the Barb situation, I would say. So a lot of people were worried about favorite character deaths, me included, man. I've been telling everybody if Steve Harrington dies, I riot. And I meant it. Like that would get me in the streets. But I really brought me to think, like, once I completed the episode, maybe I'm listening to the internet too much, because it's never really been that show where the main characters are going to die. Do you think they need more dire stakes where it's not just the person that, it's not Billy, it's not Eddie, it's not Barb, it's not a non-regular? They need a real person to die?
But I think they have to hold that, right? Maybe that's what happens at the end of season 5, right? Eleven, in her final sacrifice, ends up dying because she's the only way she can save the world. If you kill off a major character before something like that happens, you know, that takes away from that ultimate sacrifice at the end.
I feel like I don't want to say that's predictable, but I feel like that's the way it already seems like it's headed that way. So I would hope they would do something different rather than have her sacrifice herself. I don't know if I need a big character death to get me invested. Look what they did with Max. They didn't kill her off, but I'm still completely, I felt like they did to a degree. You know, my heart broke. Well,
she
just
did
as
die.
Much. Well, you know what I mean?
four bell tolls and the gates are open.
She didn't stay dead.
Well, no, because, Levin was still in her mind, so she was able to bring her mind back.
Not her mind. She brought her body back. Her mind's still lost.
But her mind is there in her subconscious. She's just not conscious.
We'll come back to that because I don't know if that's completely true. Okay, so we know from this episode that Eleven kind of caused all this in a way, because she sent him there. So do you feel like there's any part of us as fans that should, you know, blame the innocent little kid? Or do we forgive her because she doesn't know her own power?
No, we forgive her because she was being bullied by one. Like, they were making fun of her because she was different. Like, she didn't know how to control her emotions. She just needed some therapy. But, you know, for what happened, it's like, that's not on her. Like, she was trained to be a super weapon.
So, it's on Papa.
It's on Papa.
Once again, he's not redeemed. I'm just saying. Bam. Case closed. Papa's a dick. That's all I'm saying. Papa's a dick. Did you like their mind fight between Eleven and Vecna? The back. I love that because I keep watching them throw each other back and forth in the walls, and I'm like, you're in somebody's mind. I mean, this is odd. I like it.
I'm like Max. You need an Excedrin?
Yeah, somebody's got a headache. Did you like this? The whole mind layer fight?
Yeah, it was cool. I mean, it's kind of what you expect to see, but at the same time, I think for the environment that they put it in, I thought it was pretty fantastic.
Now for the season 5 finale, because Vecna is supposed to be the big bad going into season 5. You want something that's tangible, right? Something physical, something in the real world where everybody can contribute to this fight. Yes, I would think. I don't really want another mind flare fight.
Yeah, wasn't the mind flare in our real world though in season 3, or were we in the upside down during the mall sequence?
Mind lair is what I'm talking about. But the mind flare, which is the thing that he created or molded, was in the real world. That bounced into the real world, the mini one, yeah.
Right. So, yeah. So, I mean, we already technically had a real world scenario in season 3. So, do I need a real world scenario in season 5? I don't know. I kind of like this, like, three groups doing their own thing, not understanding how it's connecting to the other, because they were all like, what are you guys doing here? It's like, oh, yeah. Like, yeah. Like, it was kind of funny how it all kind of wrapped up. So, I like that concept of them trying to each do their own thing, but yet still helping each other out, because it takes all of us in order to win. So now we just need a real takes all of us in order to win. So we're all on the same playing field and not in another foreign country.
We have to stay in Hawkins. If they go to Russia, I'm fast forwarding. I'm telling you right now. I don't need any more Russia. Bring Russia
especially
here.
Especially because the Russia thing was so lame. Like, it wasn't exciting. Like Hopper should have gone through the rift into the upside down, survived in the upside down, and gone through the rift on the other side. That would have made that story so much cooler. But the fact that he just fell on a platform below, and then the Russians came and found him, it's like, no.
That still bugs you, doesn't it?
No, it's stupid. Yeah. It was more dramatic to think, like, the whole time you're like, is he dead? Is he not dead? And then you get that glimpse that right at the end, you know, oh, and the American, and you're just like, yes, he totally jumped through the rift. That's the only way he could have gotten to Russia. And then it's not true.
No, apparently Joyce didn't take the 30 seconds to go check and make sure he wasn't somewhere on the platform.
Right. Because that's why it's stupid. Because if he literally just fell down on the platform, like, someone would have looked.
100%.
Like, I push the rubble off, I pat my coat, you know, I knock off the dust, and like, Hopper.
Didn't even check. Yeah, apparently, Joyce just saw the white light, and she's like, well, I guess he's gone.
Yeah.
Man, lost two guys in a couple episodes. It sucks. All right, Steve, Robin, and Nancy kicking Vecna's ass. A lot of people love that. I thought that was, once they got the chance to do it, it was pretty awesome. Except there is a moment where Steve's got an axe and he's just standing there. And I'm like, why aren't you chopping heads, man? Why aren't you chopping heads?
Yeah. He's already like on fire running around. Just like cut each one of those vines down so he falls into place and then you can take off his head.
Something. God, do something. You got an axe. Why do you bring an axe and you don't use it? I don't get it. But anyway, it was a really cool fight scene. I loved how they Molotov cocktailed his ass and then
slow motion.
And a slow motion's overdone. It really is, but it really played here well. Really did. And Nancy got those shotgun blasts to the chest and I think the last one was to the face.
You sawed off the shotgun. Why don't you shoot him in the head? Like, I understand, hit him in the gut once, hit him in the shoulder once. It's reasons. Like, shoot him in the head. Shoot him in the head.
Reasons. And then he landed and he pulled a Michael Myers. His body's gone. Dun, dun, dun. So that's back to my earlier question. Did he win? Did Vecna win?
Well, because, the
portal's open.
The plan was to kill him.
Right.
Yeah,
but he didn't die.
He didn't die. The plan, though, wasn't a matter of if Vecna lived or died. The plan was open up the gates. And he needed the four deaths in order to make that happen for the four tones on the clock. And because, unfortunately, Max did end up ceasing to breathe, dying.
No, she died for a minute or whatever.
Yeah. So,
they found a loophole.
Did Vecna win or did the Upside Down win? Like, who's really in charge? Because the Upside Down was there before Vecna showed up.
He just organized it. Yeah. I honestly think, because I was talking to a buddy about this, and he was saying how, man, they kicked Vecna's ass and da-da-da-da, and they came out ahead. They won. You know, they took some hits, but they still won. And I'm like, I don't think they won. I think they lost. I think the plan actually failed. Think about it.
Have you ever seen this? Read the book or seen the movie or the new movies that were in two parts called It? Yeah. 27 years from now, he's coming back to Hawkins. Okay.
That's funny. Yeah. It is very reminiscent of that when you think about it, isn't it? Son of a bitch.
The reason why this show works is because just like season one, when you can say like, this was like the Ghostbusters and this was like E.T. and this was like, you see those movies that we grew up with as kids. It's like, you can see those exact same things here. The fact that Vecna lived is Michael Myers, Pennywise, Freddy, all of that stuff wrapped up into one bad guy.
Well, in my mind, you don't win when the villain is still able to hurt you, right? You've saved some time. You've bought some time. That's the phrase I'm looking for. Because the portals did open. So now Vecna, once he regains his energy, regains his health or whatever, he can come back full force. I mean, he's just basically wounded. He's licking his wound somewhere, which we'll talk about in a minute. But the portals are opened.
Like, they're downtown at the church. Like, does nobody else see the giant red lava-looking thing that's in the middle of the ground?
It seemed like
nobody was aware that the portals existed.
The people of Hawkins are very stupid because they just look past a lot of things. They just let things slide. All these things that are happening around this mysterious government facility. Nah, it's nothing there. It's all nonsense. Just get back to our 80s life watching Robert Stack on television. I think the portals seem to be like they showed that they were glowing red and everything else to begin with. But 2 days later, they just looked like maybe it's because Vecna had been wounded. So it kind of they're not closed, but they're also not open. You know what I mean? They're there. So I don't think they're glowing red anymore. They're just separations in the world. But I got to think that those portals are open. So eventually monsters are going to start rising up or we're going to start going down.
Well, yeah, we saw the quote unquote snow at the end. So there is definitely trouble a brewing.
The the Upside Down has arrived. It is on our plane now, because now we're getting, it's not, what do you call that? It's not really snow. It's more like debris, dust.
Yeah. Dandelions, cottonwood.
It's pollen. It's upside down pollen, something, but it's here. Yeah. Okay. So Max gets mutilated, which I thought, wow, ballsy. I mean, I thought for sure she was out, and then her limbs start snapping, and then I thought for sure she's got to be dead, which I guess she did technically. Brutal scene, though. Horribly brutal scene. And that's all Jason's fault, so I was glad when he got, whatever, he melted in half. That was great.
That is emotional, too, because you're like, even though you think that, you know, Eleven's in there, Eleven can save her, Eleven can bring her back out, mm-hmm. still got the teary-eyed going.
I did.
When she passed. Like, the minute those bells started tolling, you were like, no, she can't be dead. Why is she dead?
Kudos to both the actors, too, because Lucas really brought it. He's been one of those characters where I think he's been underserved for several years. The first season, I didn't think he was a very good actor, but he's really grown as an actor, and he really crushed that scene. He really did. So did Sadie Sink. I mean, I think they both did a great job. Oh, where Lucas is, Erica, help. I'm like, oh, my God, I need this poor kid. So what do you think is going on with her? Because... here's what I think. The easy answer is Vecna's in her mind, which is why Eleven can't find her, or Max's mind is with Vecna because, you know, he absorbs their minds or whatever, their memories and stuff. So do you think they're going to have to Max's mind?
No, I think Max's mind and Vecna's are separated. Vecna's just Vecna. I think Max's mind is actually inside of Eleven. And until Eleven can figure out that, and then pull it back out of her to get it back into Max. That's why Max is in a coma.
But Eleven like went
Max
in there.
Max hid in Eleven, basically.
And you just think Eleven doesn't know that?
Right, but once she goes into her mind, now our minds are fused in the same plane. So just like she could piggyback in, Max could piggyback out.
Oh, that's an interesting concept. That's not one I've heard. And now you're going to stick to it because you just probably pulled that out of your ass, right? Or just like
I what? Sure did.
I like that, though. That seems pretty... I mean, they call the episode the piggyback, so...
Yeah.
That would be an interesting twist.
You're assuming that it's the piggyback to get in, but it was really the piggyback to get out.
I like it. I like that.
Call me Duffer Brothers. I'm here. I need that Kate Bush money.
God, we all need that Kate Bush. She got millions, man. People streaming it on Spotify. She's probably the only artist on Spotify who's got millions this year. Everybody else gets like 30 cents a year. Okay, so... You know, there's been a lot of talk about is Will gay or is Will not gay. I mean, I've been alluding to it since the first season, the very first episode they talked about.
You don't say.
Yeah.
You don't say.
Uh-huh. And people are still debating this. But he had kind of two coming out moments, one with Mike where he's obviously talking to him
about himself,
trying to make him feel better about Eleven. Beautiful moment, by the way. I think he did a great job. And then his moment with his brother, where his brother is telling him, hey, no matter what, I'm still going to be here for you, no matter what. Like, I've got your back.
Because he was just looking at Mike and Eleven, getting all googly-eyed and going like, oh, I wish I had that.
Yeah. So what do you think about that? I mean, there are some people that just, they need him to say he's gay, and I don't need that. We know. I mean, I think
this is good. If you don't know after this season, like, stop watching the show.
Yeah, you're not paying attention.
Like, you're not paying attention.
But I ask you, you're an avid TV fan. I don't need him to say it.
No.
Do you?
No, not at all. I mean, there was even a moment where it was like Eleven and Max. It's like, maybe there's something between Eleven and Max. It's possible.
Maybe. I don't know. I mean, and I get this is the 80s, right? It was a lot harder back then to come out.
Exactly.
Totally different world. And
why you don't say it out loud, because it's the 80s.
I think you just need his friends to acknowledge they understand. And in the way that they do. It doesn't have to be, oh, you are gay. Okay, we support you. I don't want it like that. It's not an after-school special. Just like friends do, where they just know, and you can see it in the way that they present it.
Yep.
And Mike finally figures out that he is the dumbest friend of all time, that he hasn't put this together.
Well, I mean, as much of a leader of the group that he is, the heart, yeah, he just doesn't have a good brain.
The heart. He's the heart of the group. As long as it's Eleven, because it seems like that's what he's always chasing. I mean, he was chasing Will for a while, and then Eleven came along. He's like, you know, Will, hang tight. All right, there's a new girl in the room. I got to deal with this. I got a little
Sort of the mind flayer, which we found out is now Vecna, is literally in Will's neck hair. It's like, I got to go Mac with my girlfriend.
Poor Will.
Oh, thank God. They need Will they need to come back to the fact that Will has this connection to the Upside Down from season one and like make Will be the badass of season five. Otherwise, Will's character has just been completely useless, in my opinion.
He's kind of been wasted. Absolutely wasted.
Yeah. This is the I'm totally going to lose my Game of Thrones cred. Bran. Yeah. It's like Will's got to be like Bran and just become like the badass of the final season.
Hopefully they give him more than just two minutes at the end to become that badass. I mean, actually,
even if they only gets 2 minutes at the end, at least it'll like make his character worth something. Cause right now his character isn't worth anything at this point.
Well, don't say that. I mean, he's the driving force of the first couple seasons really. And then they just forgot him in three and four. He didn't have much to do except pine for Mike, which is, you know, he's capable of a lot more obviously by his performances and two pivotal scenes. So let's give him more to do.
And clearly he bonded with Eleven while they were moving to California. Sure. So there's like that relationship that should be explored.
Sure. Obviously you got plenty of time to explore all these relationships. God, Netflix is just saying, take whatever time you need, make 14 movies. We don't care. It's whatever. Robin also looks like she found a little love at the end.
Could care less.
Really?
I think the Robin and Nancy relationship was a lot of fun. Like that whole, you know, going to the asylum, seeing Robert Englund. I thought like their back and forth and banter, I thought was much more interesting than her having a love interest. It was like, really, everybody's got to be in a high school musical at this point.
Honestly, I'm so sick of the love triangle between Steve and Nancy and Jonathan. I'd be okay if this Robin and Nancy just went off with each other and just said, you know what? I think we work out better.
Oh no, Steve and Nancy have to end up together. Jonathan's a stoner loser now.
They really,
Nancy knows. Nancy's like, Steve, the only reason we're together is that I'm not having six kids. You know, dial it back, zero, maybe one. I'll do the RV thing with you. I'll bend, but six kids, yeah, that's where I draw the line. Hey, Jonathan, what's up?
Okay, I will agree with you that I don't care. It's not that I don't care. I like that Robin found a relationship because that was something she was struggling with the whole season. But a really cool moment of that was Steve, even though he knows he just thought he had a shot with Nancy and lost her again to Jonathan, that he's still happy for her. And I feel like that was a great moment, not because it should be all about Steve, you know, it should be about Robin and everything. It's just the evolution of his character because, you know, in the very first season, he had moments of selfishness and now he's really become this fully fledged selfless guy. And I think that's beautiful. Like he's got some of the best character development in the entire series.
Yeah. You would say that even though it was purely a friend moment, you could also say it was almost like a dad moment where he was like a proud papa. Look at my kids that I got to watch all the time growing up and getting girlfriends.
Yeah. And I do wonder how, because Eddie made sure to stress to Steve that, you know, Dustin worships him and, you know, just looks up to him and everything else. And I wonder if that's going to play a pivotal moment because, you know, Dustin lost Eddie. If in the season five, if it's going to be a situation where Dustin's not going to want Steve to go be a hero because he doesn't want to lose him too, you know, have a
something you can write towards for sure. It's definitely there.
Oh my God. It's gotta be there, right? It's gotta be. Anything else about this season that, you want to mention or especially the last two episodes movies?
I dig it. Like, you know, maybe not 2 hours, 22 minutes, but you know, that hour 90, you know, the hour and a half, 90 minutes, that felt like a good pace of show.
I like that they're not beholden to the TV typical format. Yeah.
Make a story, make a whatever you want to call it these days.
I didn't feel like it was ever being drug out.
No, not at all.
So, my God.
Could have used the potty break, but, you know.
Get a pause button. That's the beauty of watching at home. It's what everybody always says.
Yeah, but I mean, just like James Cameron, like, dude, like, you don't understand. Like, you get up and go to the bathroom, you lose the experience. You got to get back in the thing. It's like when you're having sex and the dog barks. It's like you just don't, you got to start all over again.
I don't know about you, but the dog doesn't distract me that much. And just like, as long as somebody's breaking in the house, I can keep going.
Well, you don't know. The dog's like, arr, 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 arr. You're like, holy shit, what's happening? Did someone just come home? Did I lock the door?
Maybe the dog's applauding in his own way.
Could be.
That's what it's all about.
That's what it's like to go to the bathroom in the middle of a picture. Like your brain is enthralled in the story and the environment. You cannot turn that off and be like, all right, I'm just going to get some Cheetos now. and then like come back upstairs and get back in that same groove. It's going to take like 10 minutes.
I get what you're saying.
Especially if you can't pause it in the theater. Avatar 2.
You're speaking to James Cameron's recent quote where he's like, Avatar 2, I don't want to hear you bitching because you guys binge all the time. So I don't want to hear you bitching about how long this movie is. That one?
Yeah. Gotcha. Yeah, I binge all the time because I can pause it and go to the bathroom.
But then apparently it takes 10 minutes to get back into it.
It does.
So don't do that.
So just if you're going to have a 3-hour movie, just build in an intermission.
Well, back to Stranger Things.
Build in an intermission in that 2 hours and 22 minutes.
Well, that's what an episode would be, right? That's what a typical episode break would be. But I like that. I like this. I love that it felt like a movie. It felt like an event. And
it did.
I didn't feel like it really had a specific moment where, yeah, make that an episode break and then we'll come back.
Right before the plan started, they could probably cut it there.
Maybe. Or maybe the epilogue.
I mean, the last 20 minutes wasn't that long enough to take a pee break. It's like, oh, it's only 20 minutes. I can sit it out. I needed it after the helicopter blew up, after the military stuff was done, and Eleven was back with the Surfer Boys.
I think that 2 days later was actually like 40 minutes. I mean, it was a good chunk. It was longer.
It was definitely long, that's for sure. I was like, oh my God, it's not over yet?
It was long. But you do get all the reuniting at the end, so I feel like we're ready to go. And the Duffer Brothers have said that it's going to be very much a,
winner take all.
Hit the ground running too. So they're not going to be doing a whole lot of scattered all over the world. They're going to be in Hawkins for season 5. Now, and then we also got the reuniting of Elle and Hopper, which was really, really sweet.
Yeah.
Totally forgot about that.
I left the door open just like you said.
So sweet. And of course, Will's hairy neck is going crazy. Oh, and Hopper hugging Mike. That was a very sweet moment too.
It was.
That was very nice.
Like, hey kid, I'm 20 pounds lighter and you're 30 years older.
So where do we go from here? Because the Duffer Brothers have said that season 5 will keep the characters in Hawkins. It will be a final battle type season. Is there anything you really want to see? I'll talk about something that I saw, but first, is there anything that you really want to see?
I don't even know what you could do at this point because the military lost. I mean, this would be a thing where it's like the military wants to control Hawkins because the gates are now open from a world power domination thing. So sciencey stuff, it doesn't really apply anymore. You know, I think this is just kids being kids and going on an adventure.
Well, one of the big tricks they're going to have to ride around, right, is now that the government's involved and they're on site, how are the kids going to have much of an effect here?
Right.
Outside of 11. I mean, it's going to be really hard for the kids to have much of an effect because before it was just a military lab, now you have the United States government and they're not going to give up this portal to another dimension anytime soon that I can see. That I can see.
Exactly.
So that'll be quite interesting. I did want to mention that if you notice the picture that Will drew where he was totally lying about Elle telling him to draw this thing, it seemed to me anyway, the dragon, right. Like multi-headed dragon, I think it had three heads in the painting, but in Dungeons and Dragons, there's a Tiamat, which is a supremely strong and powerful five-headed draconic goddess in the Dungeons and Dragons game, and it's basically a goddess from Mesopotamian mythology. She's the queen and mother of evil dragons and a member of the default pantheon of Dungeons and Dragons gods, but also has connections to Vecna. So I think that might be a foreshadowing of a battle to come in season 5. We might get one of Vecna's army is one of these Tiamat.
I would agree.
Monsters.
And it would fit into the whole, like, whatever the bad guy is for the season, it's whatever they were playing Dungeons and Dragons in the first episode.
Oh, just bring it full circle?
Yep.
I got to go back and rewatch that. I just literally rewatched it, and I got to rewatch
it. Yeah, remember they're in the Hellfire game. They were playing with Vecna was the name of the bad guy in the Dungeons and Dragons game.
This season or the first season?
This season.
This season, okay.
Every season, it's a different thing.
Right, it's a different D&D character.
Yeah.
Sure. So I think it makes sense. And Vecna is going to be the big bad, but I think there's going to be a lot more monsters they have to battle. And they're going to have to get Max back and a lot of other things that they're going to have to deal with. And of course, Will's going to have more awkward conversations that people don't seem to understand.
Right.
Will's going to start to talk to his mom. And his mom's just going to go, I know, honey. And that'll be it. Because Joyce always knows. She has always got it figured out.
And so does the rest of the people watching the show.
Me too.
Figured it out in season 1, okay?
And you know there's a spinoff coming? The Duffers have
said that there is a spinoff coming and it's not going to be anything you think. And so far, only Finn Wolfhard has deciphered what that spinoff would be.
As long as it isn't about eight, I'll watch it.
Yeah, they said it's not going to be like a Steve and Dustin team up. It's not going to be another number, nothing like that. It'll be something you wouldn't expect, so keep that in mind. That's probably a long way away, but it's coming. Okay, that's it. Anything else on Stranger Things before we close it out?
Just enjoy Netflix and whatever comes next, because this is Netflix's problem. Like, we all talked about Stranger Things for 4 days and now there's nothing to talk about anymore.
Shit. They have content. They've got nothing but content. Just nothing people want to watch.
Yeah, so they don't have Stranger Things.
I guess we're going to
rewatch Ozark. It's an end of a Netflix era.
That's true when you think about it. They need some more original IP. Or spinoffs. Lots of spinoffs. Stranger Things spinoff, Ozark spinoff, Lincoln Lawyer spinoff. It'll be like the Hyundai Lawyer, something like that.
Well, they could have had an Ozark spinoff, and they ruined that when they took out who they took out at the end of the year.
Don't get me started, man. Just don't do it. Okay, everybody, that's going to do it for this episode. We'll be back next week. So remember, the next time you go to a theater, buy popcorn.
Or watch a full 2-hour movie on your couch.
And make popcorn. Or make 11 make you popcorn. She can do that, right?
Ooh, she can totally do that.
Apparently, she can resuscitate people. I didn't know. That's a new thing. I'm sure Bob would have appreciated that. Somewhere, Sean Astin's like, nobody could have written this into my character?